Hello, and welcome back to the Peter Mackay Motorsport Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode. I really appreciate you taking the time to download this episode and have a listen. Today, we're going to talk about MotoGP and last weekend's round in Buriram in Thailand. So I really hope you enjoy hearing about that. You can get in touch with the show with us on Twitter, which is at Mackay Podcast, with Instagram at Peter Mackay Motorsport, Facebook, the Peter Mackay Motorsport Podcast, and you can also subscribe to the show on Podbean, and then you'll get a little notification will come up on your phone whenever a new episode is published. So I really appreciate all of you who have been listening to some of our episodes recently, and I hope you enjoy this one about MotoGP. So, what did we see at MotoGP this weekend? Well, we saw the Spanish maestro Marc Márquez finally claim his sixth world title in the Premier class. It is extraordinary to think that, you know, that Marc Márquez is already on six world titles. It is just an incredible thought. You know, came onto the scene in 2013 as a rookie with the backing of Casey Stoner. Casey Stoner retiring at the end of 2012, and as soon as he said he was going to retire, he immediately jumped to Marquez's support and said, put him on my bike and watch and wait and see. And right enough, he did, right from the word go. In fact, they actually had to change the rules. They call it the Emilio Alzamora rule. So Emilio Alzamora is Marc Marquez's personal manager. And basically, he managed to lobby for the rule to be changed where Marc Márquez could go straight into a factory team with the Repsol Honda team, because prior to that, all MotoGP rookies had to start with a privateer satellite team rather than with the full factory. And the idea was that the privateer satellite teams could get the benefit of the new upcoming superstars, but that's very much changed now. And now most good MotoGP rookies are getting straight into a factory team in some cases, like Joan Mir in this is factory Suzuki team. But Marquez came into the MotoGP fold in 2013 and was just incredible straight away, and won the title in his first year of asking, which is an extraordinary feat. And he's won every single title since, apart from 2015 when Jorge Lorenzo took the spoils. This season has been undoubtedly his best yet, though. You just have to look, we've talked about it many times on the podcast up to now, the relative performance of that Honda bike. He's the only guy who seems to get anything out of it, and he has finished, apart from a fall from the lead at Texas, where he was in a commanding lead and just a blip of concentration and lost the front, but every other race he's finished in the top two. It's just an incredible season. I'm not entirely sure what the points record is, but I suspect that he will be getting close to the points record by the end of the season. He's just been in imperious form, and a lot of these races have been you know, a little bit more of a cruise home, but some have other been plenty of last lap battles as well. And the last two races, he's had two last lap battles with his new rival, his new adversary, Fabio Quartararo, who we'll come on to in a second. But yeah, Marc Márquez, he claimed with Andrea Dovizioso, he had to score more than 2 points. Andrea Dovizioso on the Ducati in the championship would be his, and with Andrea Dovizioso back in fourth, only scoring 13 points, Marc Márquez was safe, and he was safe to go for the win and challenge Fabio Quartararo for the win. So that's it. That's the Riders' Championship sealed up with Phillip Island, we've got Motegi, we've got Sepang, and we've got Valencia. So yeah, four rounds left, and Marc Márquez has got over 100-point advantage in the championship. So it's been completely dominant. But when you look at the other Hondas, you look at Cal Crutchlow, who was 12th, who was 33 seconds behind, and Jorge Lorenzo, 54 seconds behind the winner, but we will come on to those guys in a minute. But the race was a thinking race. It wasn't necessarily crash bang wallop all the way. A little processional, you might say, if you were truly honest. But Fabio Quartararo, he ran a fantastic race. He led the whole way, did all the hard work, but managed the race very well. And the consistency of pace, just all his lap times in the 130, 131s, absolutely amazing consistency. And with Marc Marquez breathing down his neck, but Mark clearly had a lot of pace, and through the, it was interesting seeing the contrasts of the two motorbikes, how Fabio Quartararo was beautifully stable on the brakes and very, very good on corner exit, really using that nice, he's obviously, they've just seemed to get a really good setup on his Petronas Yamaha, getting a lovely drive off the corner. It's just wonderful. It was reported earlier in the weekend that they've decided to up the rev limit on Fabio Quartararo's bike. Before, he was running at a lower rev limit. Normally that's the kind of the etiquette, if you like, for satellite teams. Normally run at a lower RPM limit to sort of limit their performance slightly and not embarrass the factory bikes too much. But I think the official reason was given was due to engine mileage, but I actually think that adding a few extra revs in when Fabio Quartararo is having wheel-to-wheel battles for the win with Marc Marquez, one of, you know, the greatest rider on the grid at the moment, and really struggling down the straights, you know, Yamaha, I'm amazed that Yamaha haven't stepped in and made more of an effort to put a bit more power behind that engine. But looks like they're heading in that direction. And Fabio Quartararo has had the standout, I think, you know, standout rookie season since Marc Marquez, really. And it's a mouth-watering prospect what we're going to see in future with Fabio Quartararo and Marc Marquez as well. And if you look at who, you know, Fabio Quartararo, he's had four pole positions this year in his rookie season. The last guys to do that were Jorge Lorenzo and Dani Pedrosa, and you know, they did all right in their MotoGP careers. So it's wonderful. Do you know, it's great to see a new rider come in, French rider, Fabio Quartararo, with a brand new team, a new satellite team, the Petronas Yamaha team. That's been a really nice little subplot in the championship this year. And I just think Fabio Quartararo is gonna, if he keeps riding the way he's going, I don't be surprised to see him win a race by the end of the year, possibly at Phillip Island, because the corner speed of that Yamaha is clearly superior. Marc Marquez is just dragging that Honda around. It's just not got the same performance in the corners, as certainly not with anybody else but Marc Marquez on it. But Fabio Quartararo carrying massive corner speed. So when we get to Sepang as well, Sepang and also Phillip Island, I think you're going to see Fabio Quartararo being really strong there. And I can imagine that Sepang, the brand new Petronas team with Fabio Quartararo on the bike, and they go and win. Can you imagine that? Oh, that'd be fantastic. Completing the podium, so we had Marquez winning a last corner battle. Just Quartararo tried to take him up the inside, but Marquez was smart to it and cut back and won the race and the championship with it. But so that it was Marquez followed by Quartararo, and then Maverick Vinales only 1.3 seconds behind the leader, behind Marquez, but unfortunately did his usual, got off to a little bit of a slow, sluggish start. And I don't know what it is, if it's the motorbike underneath him or what, but Maverick Vinales really struggles to get back up to pace. But once he's into pace, he's as fast as anybody. But by that point, the damage is well and truly done. But and you could see it, just his reaction in Parc Fermé after the race. You could tell the frustration, knowing that he has the pace to match. And must be difficult when you're a factory rider and you've got a rookie on the satellite bike beating you on most weekends now. It must be quite challenging for Vinales. So Yeah, he'll be desperate to make amends and go for it. I think I've said this so many times, the Phillip Island race is going to be an absolute cracker with all the Yamahas battling and then it's such an exciting prospect. Other Yamahas, well, the other factory Yamaha, Valentino Rossi, he's having a really frustrating second half of the season. The same problem. You watched his interview on MotoGP.com, and he just looked utterly dejected. And he's basically saying this is the same. It's like a worn out record, really. It's the same issues. Rear tire problem with a brand new rear tire. It goes off after about 8 or 9 laps, and then from there they wear out the tire even more, and the problem compounds itself, and they just cannot get this rear grip to work. And was announced over the weekend that Silvano Galbisera, the guy who really revitalised Valentino Rossi's fortunes on the Yamaha, who came in 2014, and Rossi had a couple of really strong seasons with Silvano Galbisera. But again, a little bit like with Jeremy Burgess, he's decided that regardless of what successes they've had in the past, he always needs to look forward. And wow, I think that decision, he's bringing up one of the crew chiefs from his Sky VR46 Moto 2 team, and that bringing him up into his Yamaha MotoGP garage could mean one of two things, or both possibly. I think what it could mean is that Valentino Rossi, he's contracted to the end of next year. It might be that he is planning beyond that. If he's employing a new crew chief at this stage, or maybe he's thinking, if I'm going to have my last season, I want it to be a good one. So making that crew chief change, the timing is quite interesting. The other thing that he might be doing is he may be preparing personnel to prepare for a VR46 MotoGP team. Now, about 12 months ago, before the Petronas Yamaha team came in, that might have looked a lot more likely for VR46 to be a satellite Yamaha team. But the Petronas Yamaha team have done so well in their opening season that might well have shut the door. You never know. It would be interesting to see. But yeah, I'd love to know some of the thinking behind Valentino Rossi's decision to change crew chief, because although it might not sound so significant looking from the outside, but a crew chief and a rider, that combination is so, so vital. You know, some of the great combinations over the years, I mean, Rossi and Jeremy Burgess were in their day were just fantastic together. Jonathan Rea and Pere Arriba, they just seemed to be able to get the best out of that Kawasaki. Jorge Lorenzo and Ramon Forcada, they were absolutely just the most amazing combination, and they could just get the bike exactly how they want it. Johan Zarco and Guy Coulon in the Tech 3 Yamaha, they could really understand each other very well. So getting a good combination of crew chief and rider is vital. So you never know. Let's see. I mean, Yamaha, they've got to be feeling a little bit more optimistic. They've had good results over the last couple of races, but they just need a couple more ponies out of that M1 engine, just a little bit more grunt, and they can take the fight to Marquez, because clearly they do have a machine advantage. Certainly round the bends and into braking, the Yamaha is clearly a superior bike. However, down the straight, it really, really struggles, and with somebody with the kind of superhuman talent of Marc Marquez to make up the rest, that is quite a formidable opposition to have. So next year is going to be fascinating. I know we've got 4 great races to go, but lots of change and required at Yamaha to just get unlock that last piece of the jigsaw to start challenging for championship titles again. Speaking of guys who really do need a change of fortunes, poor old Jorge Lorenzo. It is just extraordinary to watch Jorge Lorenzo struggling away at the moment. 18th position, finishing 54 seconds behind the championship leader, behind the race winner, and only 2 seconds ahead of Karel Abraham on a 2-year or 3-year-old Ducati. It is mind-boggling. And We know that he's struggling with injuries, but as time goes on, you would expect him to be getting better, or whether he's hiding, you know, that his injuries are worse than they actually are, because I just struggle to believe that he can be so far off the pace. I mean, I remember when I started watching MotoGP in 2010, and Lorenzo was just incredible. He was so consistent and so fast, and he's been like that up until only the last few years. I mean, 2015 he had some amazing performances as well, and it's just bizarre to see him struggling so much. Mind you, you know, we did see this at Ducati, where his first season at Ducati did not bear anything, and it was only a good few races into his second season with Ducati that he started to perform really, really well, and it was something as trivial as a grip on a fuel tank. So you never know. He's definitely, there's no doubt about it, that you do not forget, if you're a triple MotoGP world champion, you do not forget how to ride a motorbike. There is just clearly something that is really not right, and we've known for a long time now that if Jorge Lorenzo, if his head's in the right place, then he can be unbeatable. But if the environment isn't right for him, it can really throw him off guard, worse than most riders. And well, if you're a Honda, I mean, what must it be like if you're Honda? If you're HRC Honda, Repsol Honda, Alberto Puig, you're thinking, God, we're spending millions of euros with this guy, and he's hardly scoring. He's not scoring points. It must be really difficult for Honda. Do they bite the bullet and buy him out the contract and bring somebody else in? Who knows? I mean, if you've got Cal Crutchlow, who's biting the screen trying to ride as quickly as he possibly can, and he's still 33 seconds off the win in 12th position, and he's a multiple MotoGP race winner on a Honda, so there's clearly something not right at all. But it's obviously a bike that's so well suited to Marc Marquez. He seems to be able to ride it. It seems very familiar to the way he likes to ride a motorbike, and well, the results speak for themselves. Marc Marquez has never had a more consistent season, and meanwhile all of his Honda stable mates struggle immensely. It's a bizarre situation, and it either shows you, I think it maybe tells you two things. One, that the Honda is just the most fickle motorbike, and it is designed in such a specific way to fit around Marc Marquez's wild, aggressive, heavy, hard-riding style, and the rest of... So I think that's one thing, and it's clearly not suited to the other guys riding Hondas. I think the other thing, it just shows you just quite how special Marc Marquez is. You look at this, is not only you can look at his statistics, which are just extraordinary as well, but just the difference he's able to make on that bike. Clearly he's doing something quite special, and something that the other guys can't even imagine how to replicate. And you know, as Marquez is on his own, surrounded by Yamahas and Ducatis, you know, it's been a funny season for that, and who knows what we'll see next year after, you know, good program of winter testing and so on. Not too many changes in the rider market. You know, we're still going to see Rossi and Vinales on the factory Yamahas. We'll still see the Petronas guys with Quartararo and Morbidelli. Suzuki is all the same, Ducati all the same, so there's hardly any change at all next year. So that will be quite interesting to see that continuity of riders. So Andrea Dovizioso, talking of Ducatis, Andrea Dovizioso again a little bit dejected, did all he could, but 11 seconds off the lead, and yeah, he was just, you know, very much, you know, congratulatory of Marc Marquez winning the title, but yeah, he didn't have the pace, and just hasn't had that last little bit to really push Marquez. And if you looked a couple of years ago when it went, you know, 2017, when it went to the final race, and Dovi and Marquez were having lots of battles and they were far ahead of everybody, well, he just doesn't seem to have had the pace to do that this year. So Ducati have got big ambitions. You know, they've got Dovi, they've got Miller, they've got Petrucci. They've got really, really strong riders. But there's just that something that's just, they're maybe going back to the old difficulties of the Ducati, where it's just difficult to turn, very good in braking, very, very good in a straight line, obviously. But trying to get that change of direction still seems to be a bit of a problem for them. So let's see what we'll see next year. Jack Miller, bless him. He's had a really good season. He's really, really impressed me this year. He's been really mature. He's rode some great races. But unfortunately, just it can happen to any rider. There's lots of procedure that they need to go through when they're on their warm-up lap, before they take their position on the grid for the race start. There's so many buttons they need to press and traction control modes, and they've got a dashboard with text messaging on it, and all kinds of things, that all the things to distract you from what you're supposed to be doing. And that's, you know, riding a prototype motorcycle with all the things that you can press and adjust on it. And as Jack Miller just took to his grid box in a good qualified well, and unfortunately pressed the button to switch the bike off by accident, and had to push his bike off the grid, start from pit lane and start a long way back. His pace was still really, really good, and he actually got back up into the points in 14th, which was, he was 39 seconds back. And you look what he would have lost starting from pit lane, you got to think that he would have probably would have been in maybe potentially wouldn't have made the podium, but certainly could have been in the top five with the pace that he had up there. With he had a similar pace to Andrea Dovizioso on the factory Ducati, so very, very good indeed. Very good ride, but it's such a pity that just a simple mistake that can happen to anybody held him back a little bit. But watch for him in Japan. In fact, watch for all the Ducatis in Japan when we go to Motegi in a couple of weeks, because Twinrin Motegi, it's got huge long straights and very, very hard braking areas. It's the hardest track in the calendar in MotoGP for braking, and that's something that the Ducatis have been particularly good at. And so watch for those Ducatis, and watch for Miller and Dovi. I mean, remember that Dovi on the factory Ducati, Dovi's known as one of the very latest breakers in the MotoGP field. So when we head to Japan in a couple of weeks, watch for those Bologna bikes. They're going to be up there. It was great showing from the two Suzukis, Alex Rins in 5th and the rookie Joan Mir in 7th. Really, really strong performance from them. Alex Rins, he's had a good season, couple of wins, great win at Silverstone, fantastic. Watch those Suzukis at Phillip Island, because again, a bit like the Yamahas, big corner speed track. Watch them, because if they get in the group, they're gonna feature. This is the thing, is that the circuit, the layout of circuits is so important to what bikes can come to the fore. And like we say, Motegi, will we see the Suzukis do particularly well in Motegi? Possibly, but a lot less likely. Phillip Island, you've got this beautiful flowing corner speed, lovely flowing motorcycle racing track, the best in the world for me. It's got Suzuki, sweet handling Suzuki written all over it. So watch those Suzukis, and you might see another win from Rins as well. The last mention has to go to the Petronas Yamaha team. I've mentioned them a few times on the podcast, but I don't think it can be quite stressed enough just how impressive what they've achieved this year. They've taken, you know, they're an existing racing team. You know, they've been involved in Moto2 and Moto3, and you know they're well versed to running motorcycle racing team. However, running in MotoGP is another matter altogether, and running the Yamaha M1 machine that we won't have seen before until early to winter testing is quite extraordinary. And to run a rookie, so you guys are effectively a rookie team, you're running a bike for the first time, and you're running a rookie, Fabio Quartararo, who then goes on to put together one of the best rookie seasons ever seen. And then on the other side of the garage, you've got Franco Morbidelli, who's only had the experience of a very, very difficult satellite Mark VDS Honda, really challenging bike to ride, and then comes over, so still relatively fresh as well. And poor old Franco Morbidelli, if it weren't for Fabio Quartararo, we would be singing his praises as well, because he was again very, very strong at the weekend in the top five. Just very, very, very impressive, indeed, showing that he is a very safe pair of hands as well. And I also think it's down to personnel. Wilco Zeelenberg, who was one of the guys, the masterminds behind Jorge Lorenzo's success on his side of the garage in the Movistar Yamaha team over the years, have really clearly making a difference at Petronas Yamaha as well. And what they're getting out of their package is quite extraordinary. And I think the value that they'll be giving back to Petronas and to the Sepang circuit as well, who are involved, will be fantastic. And watch out when we get to Sepang. I mean, Sepang is always one of the best attended races on the calendar, with 100,000 people. It's very close to the capital city of Malaysia in Kuala Lumpur, and they just love their motorbike racing. And if you ever find yourself in Kuala Lumpur, just watch the local riders within the city. I mean, it's like a Moto 3 race in a city centre. Guys buzzing around on these little scooters, but it's amazing. Everyone's got a scooter, and it's either got a Movistar Yamaha livery on it, or it's got a Repsol Honda livery. It's been about 4 years since I was there. In fact, I was there a week after the Sepang 2015 race, actually. So it was quite interesting going there after that particular event. But yeah, I bet you when you go there now, there'll be quite a lot of Petronas Yamaha Fabio Quartararo replicas on the underbone scooters in the city centre of Kuala Lumpur. It's a wonderful place, and I think Sepang this year, the atmosphere, they will not have a spare seat in the place. Just amazing. And it's so cool when, you know, Formula One has actually stopped going to Sepang because the interest wasn't there, and MotoGP is just packed out. It's extraordinary to see MotoGP being so well appreciated. And on that point, I should mention Thailand. I mean, that was what an atmosphere. I mean, even watching on television, you could tell the atmosphere at the circuit, the Chang International Circuit at Buriram. All the cheering and the whistling and really the excitement, you could just feel it through. I mean, even watching it on my, I think I watched it on my mobile phone on the MotoGP video pass, and you could still really feel the atmosphere as the race between Quartararo and Marquez was unfolding. So I think that the championship's decision to really focus on the Asian market and get MotoGP out there as much as he possibly can is very, very wise indeed, because if you look at most of the factory teams, particularly the Japanese factory teams, you will see funny languages, and you think, all right, so what's that? And it's, you'll see, you know, Indonesian language all over the bikes as well, and that's very much to satisfy the demand and the love for motorcycles and motorcycle racing that there is in those parts of the world. So it's fantastic, and that's what a world championship is all about. It's all about that variety and the kind of combination of challenges. So the one minute they'll be in the pouring rain at Silverstone or at Misano, it's only 12 degrees and it's cold, and then you get to over 30 degrees and hot and humid in Thailand, different food, everything. That's what being a top level world championship level rider is all about, is being able to adapt to these conditions and to different places and to embrace it as well. So I just think it's fantastic. And I think it also shows you how good a place we are in with MotoGP at the moment. Okay, the race in Thailand was a little bit processional, but came to a very dramatic conclusion with Quartararo and Marquez battling each other. But in general, the racing has been fantastic this year, and even though Marquez has very clearly been the man to beat and been untouchable in the championship battle, there's still been fantastic entertainment, and we've still got four fantastic races to come. I've absolutely no doubt, and I can't wait to watch them. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. Again, I really, really appreciate you taking the time to listen to it. I hope you're enjoying the content of MotoGP, BSB, touring cars, rally. We cover as many motorsports as we can. And if there's any particular motorsport that that you enjoy and we don't cover on the podcast, please let me know. I'd love to hear about it, and I will certainly do my best to cover it on the show. Thanks so much for listening, and please don't forget to subscribe to our channel on Podbean, and also follow us on Twitter @MackayePodcast. So thanks for listening, and I'll speak to you again very soon.